Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Hi there, and welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette, and thank you, Mark, for filling in last week while I was with my family in Cannon Beach. And we actually spread my mom's ashes. That was part of our whole family being together, and it was an opportunity to do that as well in her very favorite happy place, Haystack Rock, Cannon Beach. So there you go. Good to be back. Thank you, Mark, again for filling in while we were gone. And we are live in the studio today. And you know what? I think we're here next week, Labor Day weekend. We had all agreed. Yeah, we're close to town.
We're still here.
We're still here. We're going to be live. So if you have a question, you can call in next week as well. But here we are. And we just got notified. The old phone number. Yeah, well, some of it is back. Here is the number to get through today with your calls, 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. If you have a question for Dr. Jerry Mixon, who is here, and our gut guy, Dr. Ken Pentland, both in the studios. And since we have you, Dr. Pentland, I know you've got some things about GI health that we're going to talk about a little early on in this show. We're going to wait and see if we get phone calls here from our last show. And also talk about something that the celebrities tend to like to do. I've seen this, and I've seen sports guys do this. It's like, wait a minute, I want that energy too. Can I do this? And the answer is yes, you can at Longevity. So we're going to find out from Dr. Pentland what that is all about. Okay, so let's just dive in. Dr. Mixon, I've been gone for 2 weeks here. What's new in medicine? I'm seeing a lot of people freaking out and saying, I will not comply. Is there COVID things happening?
Yeah, there is. There is a newly mutated form of COVID out there. I'm not impressed so far. I'm not seeing lots of hospitalizations. I'm not seeing lots of deaths. It appears to be pretty much like the other two coronaviruses that are just causing upper respiratory tract infections. So I have no current intention to take the new vaccine that they're pushing on us. They've now got a bivalent that is supposed to get two of the mutations. But the problem is the newest mutation, the vaccine isn't even designed for. So it's for the two stages behind this. And, you know, if I get a cold, I get a cold. I'm not all that worried about it. Now, if the data changes and I see, you know, people in my age group starting toppling over left and right, I'll go get my vaccine, but not yet.
Taking your supplements.
I'm taking my supplements. I'll get my flu shot just because influenza kills more old folks than coronavirus now by a long shot. And, you know, I'm just going to relax, enjoy my life, go out and do my exercise, you know, go to restaurants, keep my business open, take care of my family, and enjoy myself. So I'm not gonna get paranoid about it. And that is what people are just saying. You know, just when you tell us all to put our masks back on, just shut up. Because we now know the masks didn't do any good anyway. The countries that masked and the countries that didn't mask had the same death rates. The states that that, you know, kept the schools open and didn't mask up had the same death rates. Florida, despite a massive number of old people that should be at high risk, had essentially the same death rate as New York. And New York shut down and basically committed economic suicide, and Florida didn't. So I'm not going to commit economic or personal suicide. I'm not going to give up my constitutional rights to any autocrat who decides that he wants them because there's a virus floating around. So to heck with him. Anyway, that's about as far as I'm going to go today. So I did just kind of see a fun article this morning, though. Talking about what was the Wagner group chief said, Prigozhin or something.
Oh, yes, the Russian president.
That's Putin.
No, the other guy. Okay, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, the head of the Wagner organization.
Okay.
Yeah. And, from the time that he did his little mutiny, most of us were saying, well, I wonder, is he going to fall out of a window or happen to drink some radioactive tea?
Yes.
And it turns out it was neither. His airplane just blew up.
Okay. That was, when we heard about that.
And it's fascinating because that particular model of aircraft has never had an engine or structural failure that caused a crash. Never.
Never.
There's only been one other crash of that airplane, and it was caused by pilot error.
Wow.
Okay, so why did the airplane crash? Well, I don't know. Was it a missile? Was it a bomb on board? Who knows? Did somebody shoot all the pilots? Putin killed his opponent. That's what it comes down to.
Wow. Okay. That was the big news. Was that yesterday that happened? Day before?
Days ago now, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was still trying to figure out how to pronounce the guy's name. Okay.
Well, let's get some callers.
It's Russian
instead,
to me.
So.
Yeah, the phone lines are already ringing here. Let's jump right in. Okay, we have Patty from Maple Valley. She wants to talk about gut health. So, Dr. Pentland, I bet this one is for you. So let's do Patty. She's on the phone lines here.
Good morning, Patty.
Good morning. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine.
Good morning. I could have used this call about 2-3 weeks ago.
Oh, okay. Well, now we got you.
How do we help?
Right. Mm-hmm. So, I was having a problem, and I think it was IBS. And I finally couldn't go to the bathroom. I mean, I felt I had to, so you're running to the bathroom, you can't do anything. Or you go, and it's just really bad. So I started on the FODMAP diet. That seemed to help. I went to my nutrition corner supplements, and he gave me this. It's an ultimate CFU formula, colony forming units. I don't
probiotic.
Know. Do you know what that? Mm-hmm. He called it dirt.
soil-based probiotics. Yeah.
Yes, I'm going to guess so. Is that a good thing to take?
There's some good research about soil-based probiotics versus the sort of regular kind that you get at most supplement stores.
Lactobacillus based.
Right. Yeah. Some schools of thought that think it's, there's not a long-term research on it, but most of the research I've seen on it is very favorable.
Okay. So I should continue taking that then.
Mm-hmm. Unless you have any, noticeable side effects to it.
No, everybody. My kids just said, "Well, I'll give you free dirt because it costs a lot of money to buy this."
Yeah, they do tend to be more expensive. Yeah. It's true.
But see, the issue is for most of human history, we got our gut bacteria from the dirt.
Yep.
Right.
Because we grew our own gardens and we gathered and hunted stuff, and we didn't sterilize it; we ate it.
Right.
And then when we started doing the probiotics.
Now it's from fermented things like dairy and grains and things.
But when we started doing the probiotics 50 years ago, 60 years ago, they picked the easiest to get ones, the lactobacillus, the stuff that is in cottage cheese and yogurt and so on. But that's not what our gut traditionally had. That was just what was easily available. And so it's evolved. And now they've come around to the original idea that, wait a minute, we originally got all of these bacteria in our gut from the soil. Why not use those sorts of bacteria in the new probiotics? And so that tends to be the newer trend. And I suspect that it's probably going to be a lot better than what we've done in the past.
Okay. Okay. So when this all started, like about 3 weeks ago, I mean, and I did not have a bowel movement for like weeks, a couple of weeks. And I'm like, this is not good. I don't think. But what should I have done? I waited it out, and then I did start this food map, and so I'm kind of getting back to being regular. What should I have done?
Well, I probably wouldn't have waited it out. I probably would have, at least do some kind of laxative to make sure you get bowel movements at least every other day.
Yeah, certainly, like milk or magnesia.
Yeah.
Something that simple. What day should she have started that? Definitely like...
Definitely by day three, but probably sooner.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I have had a couple of patients that have not had bowel movements for 2 weeks.
Wow.
One of them... had a prolactinoma, which is a brain tumor, a benign one, but prolactin tends to cause constipation. Not saying that you have that, but there are some sort of extreme things that could be going on if it takes that long to have a bowel movement.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk more about that, Patty, in the show with Dr. Pentland since we have him here. So stay tuned in the next several minutes. We'll be talking more about that.
Okay. I will do that.
Okay.
Right. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Patty. All right. Okay. And in fact, why don't you go ahead and start? You had some good information that you were talking about and introduced a new word to me, which is transit. And it was just a very nice term to say the exiting of our food.
Transit time. Yeah.
Transit time.
Do we have enough time to go into
You know what? Why don't you give us a little bit of information now after we take our break? We'll continue with that because you had some good information on why it's important to pay attention. And especially, I was thinking, wow, she probably should have started something after a week. But you're like saying by 3 days.
Well, there's two main areas or two sort of, things you'd want to look at for general indications of GI health.
Okay.
One of them is frequency of bowel movements.
Okay.
The other one is transit time of bowel movements. And they're related, but they're kind of measured differently. So – in general, everyone's a little different, but in general, folks should be having about 1 to 3 bowel movements per day that are well-formed, not too hard, not pebbly, easy to pass without pain or urgency. They should be light to dark brown. There should be not be an uncomfortable amount of gas and bloating. And with transit time, it's a little hard to measure, but it's generally 12 to 24 hours if everything is working well.
Oh, wow. Okay. 12 to 24 for transit time. Okay, so how do you know that breakfast was not happening in the afternoon? I'll leave you with that question. How do we know, or are there ways to tell how I'm sure there are.
There are a couple methods we can talk about.
Okay, we'll do that, Dr. Pentland. Let's find out more about that. We've got our gut guy here. If you've got questions about your GI health, this is the guy to talk to with your questions. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Ken Pentland. Stay right there. Welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Hi there. My name is Lynette, back from vacation. And Dr. Samira Umat, I tagged her. She is now taking her vacation. She's taking a weekend off. Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio with us today. And Dr. Ken Pentland, we've been talking about GI health. And one of those important things is transit of the GI and frequency, too. You were just mentioning those.
Yeah, those are the two kind of indicators that you can look at for GI health on your own without a physician.
And the frequency surprised me. I was thinking, one a day. And you were like 1 to 3 is normal.
True, yeah. Okay. Most people do one a day, one to two, but 1 to 3 is
good.
Is still considered normal.
All right.
And the transit time, you know, that can be an issue for people that they will often overlook.
Okay. And how do you know? So tell us about transit time. That's the exiting of the food that we eat.
Well, yeah, I wanted to talk about this a little bit because in my experience, in the GI field, people often overlook their symptoms. They take GI health for granted. And as long as they can get away with like a Tums or Imodium or laxative or something, they'll kind of just let
it
slide.
Ignore it. Throw a Band-Aid on it. Okay.
Right. GI health – in Chinese medicine, they talk about GI health as the root of good health. Mm. And you know, all the old texts talk about if stomach qi is not good, then the rest of the body will suffer. So it's hugely important, and that's why I got interested in it. You know, the colon is 3 to 5 feet long, and its job is to absorb the remaining water and nutrients from the material that passes through. You know, like 2.5 gallons of water pass through the colon every day.
Every day?
Every day.
I don't even drink that much water.
But it's in the tissues. It's in the food.
Okay.
And it's filtering and getting recirculated
wow. okay.
in the body.
Another reason to drink water.
I always tell patients to drink more water, right, unless they're already drinking plenty. But if the stool is sitting in the colon too long, you're going to start developing problems from that.
Oh.
And so the transit time is something that we talk about. It's important. The method that I was mentioning to measure that, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. You take about 5 grams of activated charcoal, which comes in capsule form. You can get it at the supplement store. 5 grams would be probably about 10 capsules.
Seriously?
Yeah.
So if you're taking 10,
yeah.
don't freak out.
Right, yeah.
You're just doing this once.
But you take that with about 12 ounces of water or so because it can be a little constipating. In fact, I use it oftentimes for patients that have a little diarrhea from something like food poisoning or other kinds of things. If diarrhea, you know, it's usually a better out than in situation.
Yes, I would think.
Something's trying to get out of the body in a hurry. And Imodium, you know, just kind of keeps it in. It might reduce symptoms, but it's not always the best solution. So charcoal acts like a sponge, and it will help bind those toxins.
It gets all the the bad stuff out.
And so that will be a little bit more preferable in some cases. But
so after you take that, then what do you do?
Yeah, after you take that, you write down the date and time, and then look for the gray or dark colored or even black stools.
Oh, okay.
That come out.
Yeah, that's kind of your marker.
Right.
Okay.
And then you calculate the number of hours. Alternatively, you could use beets. Eat like 2 or 3 beets, whole beets, and that will, you know, show up as red instead of black.
Oh, yeah.
But sometimes it's scary if you forgot you ate beets.
Yes, if it's 2 days later. Yeah, don't be alarmed.
But, you know, like I said, 12 to 24 hours is a good transit time if everything's working well. But oftentimes, especially Americans, the GI symptoms, even without significant GI symptoms, transit time can be between 48 to even 96 hours.
What? And so it's sitting there? No wonder.
Yeah. And I, you know, like this last caller, I've had patients that have had not had bowel movements for even up to 2 weeks.
Wow. Okay.
So it's when that happens, we talk about what's going on with the liver, right? Mm-hmm. The problem is when the material sits there a long time, the stools become more pebbly looking, so you can kind of tell. Another thing that's passing through the colon at that time is bile acid, which comes from the liver. And all sorts of waste materials are dissolved in there. The body's trying to get rid of that through the colon. And the longer it sits there, the more concentrated that bile acid becomes. It irritates the gut lining and causes inflammation.
And that's all stuff that we may not have symptoms
with necessarily.
You might
not even notice at that point. There's not a lot of nerves running to the colon that you actually – you don't have sensation there really.
So except if you haven't gone to the bathroom or had your transit time in a couple of days, you need to be aware. Even though you're not in pain, you're not having cramps, your tummy doesn't hurt, you need to do something though, right?
You generally just get alerted if something's – seriously, if there's a lot of gas pressure or about the urge to have a bowel movement. But the liver, it's a big blood filter, and the portal venous system is a vein system that transports blood from the intestines. Nutrients and toxins are absorbed, and they go to the liver to be cleaned up. Right. So after the blood is detoxified, the liver controls the release of sugar and nutrients into the bloodstream.
Okay.
So the liver now, it will detoxify that in several steps. I'll get a little technical here, but one of those steps is called glucuronidation.
Wow. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a necessary thing.
A necessary thing.
Its job is to slap a glucuronide molecule onto certain toxins like carcinogens, used hormones, processed drugs, things that are coming through the body, make them inactive after they've been used so they can be safely transported out of the body through the intestines. Mm. And if all goes well, then the body gets rid of those harmful substances. But there are bacteria in the colon, both good and bad bacteria, that make an enzyme that depackages those toxins. And the longer the stool sits in the colon, the more likely that is to happen. And when that happens, now you've got free-floating toxins in the colon. Mm. And so that's a problem.
Okay.
Right? So you get increased inflammation, increased damage to the intestinal lining, increased risk for colon cancer, breast cancer, and things like that.
And again, those are things that are going on in your body that you cannot necessarily feel.
Right.
But it's important to take care of.
High beta glucuronidase enzyme is associated with poor dietary habits, high fat, high sugar diets, low fiber diets, a lot of processed food, frequent alcohol or smoking, and poor hydration habits. So, if your regularity is not optimal, if you have some GI symptoms that are persistent that aren't impacting your quality of life enough to do something about it, a little acid reflux, gas and bloating, but it's consistently happening to you, consider coming in, talking about getting a comprehensive stool test, help optimize your GI health, and, check your beta-glucuronidase levels.
Okay, very good. And if you are a patient at Longevity in Kirkland, you can see Dr. Pentland. He is there, and he is the doc in charge. We like to call him our gut guy here in the studio. Okay, it looks like we have a caller that has a question about the colon, so let's direct that right to you, Dr. Pentland. Jane from Burlington. Hi there, Jane.
Hi. Yes, my daughter's been diagnosed with a tortuous colon. It's evidently extra long. She went to a naturopath finally that a friend recommended, and they had her do a CAT scan and found out this. She's had issues for a while now. When she eats, she can only eat small amounts, and then she just feels kind of nauseous or whatever, and things are not going through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that can be an issue. I've seen that a lot in patients, that have IBS symptoms as well.
Because the colon is longer?
Extra long colon.
Extra long.
Some people have an extra long colon and don't have symptoms, but you want to basically support motility and digestion. You know, food should be easy to digest. Or you should be supporting digestion with certain types of enzymes and probiotics, right? And then there are things called prokinetics, which improve motility. They're supplements and they're prescriptions that do that. There's a wide range of them. If you have a naturopath on board, they may be able to help you with some of those kinds of things.
Okay, because the naturopath had her see a GI doctor, but he just said to take Metamucil and I think something else for several weeks and see if that helped. But
Fiber, of course, is an important part of GI health. But in some people, if their transit time is longer, the water's getting absorbed quicker, it's more risk of turning into a brick. Helping to get through.
I think that's how she feels.
So it's important to stay well hydrated, use a lower dose, maybe smaller, more frequent doses of fiber. Start with like a children's dose or like a teaspoon. If they're telling you to take 2 or 3 tablespoons, just start with a very small amount. The goal is – and laxatives if necessary. You want to keep the bowels moving, but you also want to be looking for a more long-term support that doesn't make you rely on laxatives.
Right? And one of the easy things is just to make sure you're taking a good magnesium supplement.
Magnesium.
Magnesium.
Yeah, magnesium is not well absorbed from the gut, but it's important. It lowers your blood pressure. It relaxes your muscles. It helps your brain function better, and it keeps your bowel moving. So, get a couple of good magnesium capsules.
But I'm not sure what kind, but...
So the dose of magnesium that you'd want to take is different for everybody. It's they call it up to bowel tolerance. So that's a threshold that's different for everybody. So it can be anywhere from 3 to 8 or even 1,000 milligrams per day.
And a certain type of magnesium? I know there are different kinds.
Some are better absorbed than others. So the magnesium oxide, the magnesium hydroxide. Hydroxide is basically milk of magnesia, or the magnesium citrate. Those would be the ones that you would think of for laxative benefit.
Okay.
I recommend the citrate because you get the sort of muscle and liver benefits as well as the laxative benefits.
Okay. And as far as probiotics, did you say that would be something too?
Always a good idea for gut health,
And prokinetics, I guess, is what I meant.
Oh, prokinetics, that's a little more in-depth discussion.
Okay.
Yes. Okay, did you get some good answers, Jane?
Yes, I think so. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you for the call, ma'am.
Okay. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back. Tim, we're going to talk with you in just a moment. And we have room for your questions as well. Live in the studio, Dr. Pentland and Dr. Mixon. And we have a phone number. We have our old one back, 206-421-5757. Again, that's 206-421-5757. Call in and we'll get you in very soon. Okay. Thank you for listening. Stay right there.
After driving out the memory of the way things might have been, after I've forgotten all about us, the song remembers well. We were rolling through the rocket.
We're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Oh, yes. And we're glad you're here live in the studio this week. And we'll be live next week. Sometimes we record our Labor Day program, but we're all here. We're like, hey, let's be here live in the studio. So wanted to let you know that. Dr. Jerry Mixon here today and Dr. Ken Pentland, our gut guy, here as well. Already getting so much good information, things I did not know. So very good. I'm just going to say I'm 1 for 3 right now, in case you're wondering, Dr. Okay, we're going to go to Texas right now. We have a caller, Tim, calling in. Good morning, or should we say howdy, y'all?
Yeah, that works.
That works.
All right. Or actually, I should say yes, ma'am. Because that's what we're saying.
That's right.
Or sweetheart. I think they do sweet or bless your heart. Yeah.
Yeah.
How can we help you, Tim?
It's all good. Well, I had a couple of questions for Dr. Mixon, but all this talk about transit time got me thinking. I was told by a vegan that one of the reasons meat is not good is that it sits in your colon and whatever carcinogens and other bad stuff is in there has more of a chance to be absorbed. And the ideal is to have a quick transit time, get your nutrients and get rid of everything else. How true is that?
Well, a lot of people that have a lot of meat and bread in the diet generally have a low fiber diet. And so that's probably why transit time is suffering in those cases.
Yeah, the meat itself doesn't slow it down. But, for instance, if you look at the obligate predators, the animals that only eat other animals, they have a very, very short colon, very short bowel. Because the meat is basically very close to them, and if they break it down, they get a lot of nutrition in a short period of time, and they don't need a long bowel. If you've got people like things like human beings, we are omnivores. We are designed to eat everything.
Mm.
If it doesn't eat us first, we eat it.
We eat it,
real simple. And so we can survive on almost any diet on the planet. We can live on strict vegetables. We can live on strict animals. We do best if we get a mix of stuff. Okay. The animal flesh is a very, very high quality protein. And you get a lot of protein in a small amount of meat. And since our teeth and our claws are pretty puny, and almost every animal out there can outrun us.
Yes.
No, our ancestors didn't get a lot of meat because they hadn't developed agriculture yet, where we kept them captive so we could kill them at our leisure. So we were designed for primarily a vegetable-based diet, but not exclusively a vegetable-based diet. If we were designed for exclusive vegetables, we would have a very, very long colon, like a cow or a deer.
Ah.
Animals who eat just plants need a lot of gut to slowly break all that stuff
down. And multiple stomachs.
Yes. And
so a quick transit time is not necessarily
what
you're looking.
It depends on what you're eating.
Yeah.
But in humans, with our medium-sized gut,
okay,
we don't want to keep it around too long. And it's not the meat that has the carcinogens. It's how you cook the meat.
Ah.
If you char the meat, you create carcinogens.
Ah, the blackened chicken, yes. The blackened.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
If you put it on the grill until it's got that char on the outside, that's carcinogen. Don't eat that, okay?
Okay.
If you boil it, fry it quickly, you steam it, you don't get those carcinogens. But, you know, you get carcinogens from vegetables, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the toast. Anything that makes your veggies and your toast brown or crisped.
That's right.
Also is a carcinogen. So it's the overheating that causes the cancer. It's not the food itself most of the time.
Okay. All right, is that helpful for you, Tim?
Yes, thank you. Next question. A couple of weeks ago, Dr. Mixon, you said that collagen supplements are not worthwhile because you can't break them down. The answer I've heard to that
You do break them down. You have to break them down.
Well, right. Into amino acids. I've heard that if what you're taking is hydrolyzed collagen peptides, that those are already broken down and
precisely
and are absorbed.
Yes. That's absolutely true. Yeah, I mean, they sell, for instance, shark fin collagen that has been hydrolyzed. You know, the environmental folks have a fit about that because they want to protect the sharks. You know, they think there's not enough sharks out there eating people. Personally, I consider anything that thinks it's higher on the food chain than I am can die. But, you know, that's just me. You know, I am a big fan of hydrolyzed proteins, whether they are from soy or from whey or, you know, whatever. Pea protein works just fine, too. The idea is to get the amino acids so that your body can absorb them very quickly and turn them into the proteins you need. Because human protein is not the same as cow protein or shark protein or deer protein or, you know, bean protein. It's uniquely us. So you just want to provide your body with all the amino acids it needs, and it'll make what you need.
Okay, that sounds good.
One more.
I should just point out one thing about the collagen, though. If you just supplement collagen protein alone, it's not a complete protein.
No, it's not.
Ah. So you do want a good variety of other things.
Yep.
Good.
Yeah. A couple of weeks ago, Dr. Mixon, you said that the disadvantages of taking metformin for anti-aging purposes are because of problems with the B vitamins being absorbed, right? But if the disadvantage you're concerned with is the effect that the metformin may have on your exercise tolerance, is that affected by B vitamins too? I've never heard of a connection between B vitamins and exercise.
Well, B vitamins provide a lot of energy. You know, if you're short on B vitamins, you tend to be fatigued and lethargic. You don't have a lot of energy. That's why the energy drinks always throw a big whack of B vitamins in.
Okay.
They tend to wake you up and make you more alert. But, you know, other than that, I don't worry about it. Metformin has got a couple of disadvantages. The diarrhea, abdominal cramping, bloating. So you have to start with a fairly low dose, and as your gut adjusts, you can start raising the dose up to the point that you're getting the longevity advantages. It also, obviously, it lowers your blood sugar. If you already are lean and fit and have fairly low blood sugar, you may not want to drive it down any further, you know. But it is a sirtuin-1 inhibitor. It's a SIRT-1 inhibitor. It has that in common with rapamycin. And so we really think its effect on the SIRT-1 is probably what is giving it its extended lifespan advantage.
So you don't think that taking, say, 500 milligrams once a day would have much an effect on exercise? I've heard it suggested, well, you just don't take it before or after exercise.
I don't know. Most of the people taking it either take an extended-release tablet in the morning or they take it twice a day with the shorter acting. And that's just because one of the things you're trying to do is to lower your insulin resistance and get the sugars in the glucose into the cells where it can be burned faster and get it out of the bloodstream. And since you're eating in the daytime, not at night while you're asleep, you know, as long as the glucose load is coming in the day, it's kind of nice to have the metformin there in the day too. But you know, I exercise pretty vigorously on a regular basis. I've got decent muscle mass, and you know, I've never seen metformin get in my way.
Now, did you say that you stopped taking it, though?
I stopped taking it, but I stopped taking it primarily because I started on the rapamycin, and I only need one sirtuin inhibitor at a time. I just thought it was redundant to take both the metformin and the rapamycin.
Right.
Okay. Is that helpful, Tim?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
That's good.
Okay,
you bet,
care,
Tim. Sir. We'll talk to you again. All right, we're going to take another break here. And you know what? Our next caller actually has a question about rapamycin. We'll get to you, Chris, in just a moment. Mike and Ray all on the line. Oh, and Monty, too. Stay right there. We'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine.
Now the race is on, and here comes pride in the backstretch. Heartache going to the inside. Tears are holding back there, I'm trying not to fall. My heart's out of the running, two loves scratch for another sake. The race is on and it looks like heartaches, and the winner loses all.
We're back, Leading Edge Medicine. We always have so much fun in the studio live with you every Saturday morning. And my name is Lynette. Big thank you to Mark who filled in for me last week. It was so nice to get away. And he's awesome to have come in. So thank you, Mark, if you're listening today. And he's our producer. Dr. Jerry Mixon here in the studio and Dr. Ken Pentland as well. And we're taking your calls today. Here is the number we're using. It is kind of our old number, 206-421-5757 if you have a question for the doctors today. All right, Chris in Stanwood wanted to talk about that rapamycin. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Chris.
Hi. Hey, fascinating subject today. Lots of good questions.
Yes.
I have a couple questions. Last week you were talking about a rapamycin, but I wasn't able to hang around and listen long.
All right.
And you were referring to dental work. And unless I was totally off base, you were talking about dental work and a rapamycin. I do have a couple comments about joint replacement. My surgeon, I had a hip replacement in 2016. My surgeon insisted on antibiotics for any dental work in that. So I go to my dentist within 6 months, and he gave me dutifully the antibiotics. But he said it's only effective that. Studies show it's not effective after 6 months. And that was reiterated to me this last week, and I commented to my a new dentist. My other dentist had retired, and he said the same thing. It's only effective, studies show it's only effective for 6 months. So I haven't been able to get antibiotics for my dental work, and that kind of concerns me. But anyway, that's the story on that, what I was told. So anyway, what is there any correlation or with dental work and a rapamycin? And then myosin is, I associate that with antibiotics, or am I off base on that as well?
No, you're right on track. Okay, let me go back and comment on a couple of those. First of all, the dentists are right. The newer studies are showing that it's probably overkill. It's probably not necessary to do the amoxicillin. Because what happens is within 6 months, in fact, within 3 months or so, when you've had that surgery, you've got a wall of scar tissue being laid down as a barrier to kind of protect things. So there's an encapsulation that is protecting that joint area pretty well. Mm. But you have to remember the dentist is not the guy that would have to go in and replace your joint if things went to hell.
Yeah.
So he can afford to be a little more blasé about it. The dentist or the surgeon is the guy that if lightning should strike and you got an infection in that joint, he's the one who's stuck with the problem. And
yeah.
So he's more likely to be very, very conservative about taking any chances of any kind. So it's a difference in perspective.
And I agree with you there, and that's been a concern. But when I did check with my surgeon if he would prescribe it, he said, no, your dentist has to prescribe it. So
yeah,
I'm between a rock and a hard spot.
That's right. But see, if the surgeon really thought it was important, if he really thought it was important, he'd write the prescription.
Ah. Well, that's
come
what
on.
I thought, too.
Yeah, he's an MD. He can write amoxicillin, for God's sake.
That was my impression, too. But who am I to argue with him?
That's right.
So anyway, the rapamycin, and again, I might be off base. You were talking about dental work, I thought, last week in a rapamycin.
Well, it was one of the, it's one of the kind of side things that have been observed. People on rapamycin almost never get gingivitis. And people who had gingivitis and are using rapamycin for things like their transplants, the gingivitis tends to go away. And so there are a fair number of people that are using rapamycin around the country that want to get that benefit because, you know, some folks have gingival and gum issues. And so there are some folks that are having their compounding pharmacist basically add a little bit of rapamycin to their toothpaste. And they get a custom compounded toothpaste with, you know, so you get your Crest with rapamycin toothpaste.
I see. Okay.
Just so they get a big dose of rapamycin on their gums and stuff and don't have to worry about the cholesterol or blood sugar side effects of rapamycin taken orally. But generally, the folks that, you know, this was first observed in are transplant patients because the FDA approved rapamycin for use in immunosuppression for transplant patients so they don't reject their transplant. And it's very effective at that. But it was just been observed then on those thousands of people that are on high-dose rapamycin for long periods of time. They don't get cancer nearly as often. And if they do get a cancer, their cancer spreads much more slowly and indolently. And they tend to grow hair again on their heads, the guys. And their gingivitis tends to clear up. And their kidney function tends to clear up. And their prostates get smaller and better function. And, you know, I mean, and their bones get denser. The fact is rapamycin is right now the closest thing we've got to a real live fountain of youth anti-aging drug. Okay,
amazing.
In all of the animal studies, from worms to fruit flies to mice to rats to dogs to monkeys, they all have extended lifespans on rapamycin. It's the only drug we've ever found that every animal we give it to lives longer and lives better, acts as though they're younger and faster and stronger and healthier. And, you know, and so a lot of virtually every longevity anti-aging doctor on the planet is using rapamycin for themselves and their families.
Is that something you want to be on for life?
Well, we don't know. We do know. Again, you got to remember, humans live a long time.
Yes.
Mice, laboratory mice live an average of 25 weeks, or sorry, 25 months. Okay.
Just over two years.
So
well, a pet mouse the same, pretty much.
Yeah. So if you give rapamycin to a 20-month-old mouse, they're 5 months from when they'll usually die. But what you find is they live longer. They don't die on time.
Ah.
But we also now have discovered that if you give it to a young mouse and don't give it to them when they're old, they also live longer.
Okay.
So it does things to us. And so we're looking at why does rapamycin extend lifespan so efficiently in so many animals? And one thing it does is it actually changes the way that the DNA in our gut is wrapped. That double helix that you've all seen pictures of, what makes that double helix, it's wrapped around histones. And the more histones you've got, the more tightly it tends to be wrapped. And the more tightly it's wrapped, the less prone it is to get damages, breaks, and mutations. And so one of the many ways it's probably working is by increasing histone production to more tightly wrap our DNA. So that would say even in young animals, they still have a benefit when they get old. But even if you started in old folks, you get benefits.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a fascinating compound.
Yes. Yes, sounds like it. I have a quick question, hopefully, about vitamin therapy.
Okay. Hold on. We've got less than 60 seconds before this break. And then we'll be back, and you
can ask your
question about vitamin therapy.
Oh, yeah, and do we have some answers and some good news? And we're going to share that with you. So, Chris, hang on the line. Mike, Ray, Monty, we'll get to you in just a few minutes. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Stay there. And if you have a question for us, give us a call, 206-421-5757. We'll be right back.